Well, hello, lovers, and welcome to Tiani Talks Astrology. I am super excited to be bringing you something new to my podcast, which is a monthly guest. And Mario is just kicking this off in divine timing in Taurus season. So I really am so excited to bring Mario on from Symbolic Studies. I'm a little bit of a nerd and stalker of his, and I'm excited that I really feel like I'm meeting a bit of a wizard today. And so I want to share him with everyone, which you may already follow him on Instagram under his handle Symbolic Studies, and you will know this voice. So welcome, Mario.
Hey there, thanks for having me.
So excited to have you on. Like I said, your voice is just this smooth. It's and it makes sense. He's got Mercury in Cancer in the third house, right? Like this is all around speaking for him. You could do voiceover work, radio. I mean, you could do meditations. We love listening to your voice, and we love hearing your deep interpretations of archetypes and symbols. And if you're not familiar with Mario, you're going to get familiar with him. And I want to say, jump over to his Instagram page and follow Symbolic Studies, because he unpacks, especially obviously for me being an astrologer, unpacking the symbols of astrology, which is where I, sort of really share in my teaching as well, Mario. I tell people, look at the bull. Like, let's just look at the bull. Let's look at the ram. Let's look at the scorpion. Like, if you even understand them on a, on a physical 3D level, even of what they do and what they represent, it really helps you to understand, astrology and your own chart, right? Do you f feel like that's sort of where you've gone with it as well?
Oh yeah, exactly. For sure. And I'll say that the bull was one of my first loves in symbolism. So it was one of the first animals I really gravitated towards. And when I found out how deep that well was, I mean, I was pretty much hooked. So I would say, honestly, for a number of months, that was just a topic of research for me. And there's so much mythology. There's so many interesting things about the bull. And really, my story kind of is, I really wanted a solid symbolic foundation. And I'm like, if I'm going to achieve that, I have to understand astrology. I have to understand the symbols of astrology, the animals and creatures of astrology. And so when I came across the bull, and going to India too was actually huge for me in understanding bull symbolism and cow symbolism and all of that. And so there was a lot for me to absorb when I took that trip. And so the bull, the cow, is kind of a muse in a lot of ways for me, to be honest with you. And it connects so many different groups and religions and cultures and things like that. So really, the bull, there's so much going on there. It's almost like what lane, what part of the bull do we want to talk about? Because it's absolutely massive, right?
Yeah, it is. We were talking just a few moments before we started recording, and it's like, do we go to even, just unpacking how prominent the fixed stars are in the constellation of Taurus, right? Like, so of course, yes, like we're, letting the cat out of the bag or the bull out of the paddock. We're speaking of Taurus in Taurus season. I mean, look, you've got a Taurus rising, right?
Yes.
Yes, of course you do. I'm glad that you know that. And I've got a stellium in Taurus. I've got my sun, Chiron, Mercury, and sorry, Mars and Venus in Taurus. Mercury's in Gemini. And so Taurus, obviously, like I'm a fucking walking bull, realistically. So, this is an exciting topic for me as I embody the bull very, very well. And of course, it's your lens. Taurus is your rising sign, so you have this strong connection. So I love that you call the cow your muse. So I want to actually, talk about this deep knowledge of yours before we really, like you said, it's a very rich archetype because of the mythology, because of like, even just the reverence around the bull in the Minotaur, and all of the different facets, that you can go down with the bull itself, and then Taurus, the archetype. And I want to give my listeners something rich, which is what you share, but then also something really practical and grounded that they can sort of embody, which is very much what we do as a Taurus rising and Taurus sun stellium. But I really want to, also just unpack for you where this begun. Like, I know you're an artist, and you know, so drawing obviously sort of comes into that, but also how did the sort of the unpacking of deeply diving into the archetypes and just the way that you do it, and I've seen your array of books that you share with us sometimes, like where, you know, I love that your Mercury is in the third house because this is like a natural communicator, but it's deeply steeped in, of course, Cancer, you know, so this is like strong memory, strong, you've got this knowledge in your waters, so it's there, but I'm just like, I'm very curious. I've got Mercury in Gemini, so I'm like curious to know where it all started.
Yeah, I've always been very visual. I've always been creative. I used to illustrate quite a bit when I was younger, and I think I've always been an observer for sure. And I feel like I always wanted to know the deeper sort of aspects of everything. And in high school, I got into graphic design, and so this would become my career. I've been doing design work for, like 25 years now. And so I've really given myself many, many opportunities to refine my eye and to see things sort of in a different way. And so I feel like because of design, because of art, and just my interests with all things visual, that eventually I realized that symbolism was even a thing. I remember coming across my first book on symbolism, which I've never been growing up. I was not a reader. In my teens, I was not a reader. I wasn't really interested in books. It wasn't until my mid-20s, I would say, that I really start getting interested in certain authors and in certain subjects. But coming across a book on symbolism, I thought was fascinating. I'm like, wow, you can buy a book and it tells you what the line means, what the bull means. It tells you about colors and numbers and things like that. And I thought this was pretty cool. And being visual, there was a lot of icons, lots of graphics, lots of pictures, and things like that. And that began sort of my trajectory with wanting to acquire more and more books on symbolism. So after a while, I got the lay of the land with different authors and publishers and books that were common and uncommon. And I just built up this library. And I would say that going to film school was very pivotal. I was in film school for a number of years, and I found out that I really liked decoding films, and I really liked kind of critiquing everybody's projects and starting to recognize the patterns between different filmmakers. I had friends that were creating short projects, and I would see two or three projects, and I'm like, do you realize that every single movie you've made, there's a scene in the kitchen? That means something, psychologically or spiritually or whatever you want to say. And so I was really good at picking up things like that. And I felt like I had a knack for it. And it wasn't really, though, until I discovered the tarot, did things kind of blow wide open because the tarot exposed me to astrology. I got interested in numerology because of that. I got interested in various, aspects related to mythology and whatnot. So the tarot came to me because a friend of mine wanted to build a tarot website. And knowing that I was a designer, he was like, you should design this for me. But if you're going to design this for me, you have to know something about the cards. And he actually designed or programmed a tarot reading engine for one of the biggest tarot sites in the world. And he said, I could do a better job and I can just do it on my own. We can go, into this together. And so he bought a number of books on the tarot. I brought a few home. I cracked one open. And very naively, I thought I knew about symbolism because I was an artist. I went to film school, all these types of things. I suddenly realized, very quickly realized that I didn't know anything. It was so deep and it was so layered that I was just hooked. I was really fascinated. And I was like, this is much, much more layered than I ever expected it to be. And so from there, I started buying tarot decks. And then really, it was just kind of the floodgates were wide open after that. And so after a while, I decided that I was acquiring a lot of information, but I felt like I was consuming too much, but not necessarily putting things out. And I felt like I was actually kind of unbalanced that way. And so I felt like I needed to project. And so I created Symbolic Studies and decided to do a little poster series, which I'm still working on. It's been years in the making where I want to illustrate every single sign. I actually have my Taurus print here. I don't know if it makes
Oh,
sense to show you, but
yes,
have you seen?
please.
Yeah, okay. So this is my Taurus print.
I
And
love.
so yeah, so this is actually silk screened by hand, and I've only done a few at this point, and I really would love to complete this, but really this is, at the time of this creation, this was probably a few years ago. What my idea was to pretty much encode as much as I can about the sign visually. And so there's stuff in here relating to Venus and the Taurus field and the moon and the Pleiades and all sorts of things. So it's been a cool project. It's taking a little while for it to get done, but that's okay.
Well,
And
there's a
so,
lot to cover. So, like to un and just
yeah.
looking at the photo, the image that you've created, it's sort of like when we look at the tarot card, there are so many deep things within, to actually unpack and seeing that I've seen, the moon and the Isis connection and then the five stars of the Venus, in her cycle and how she retrogrades and you can see that five-pointed star. So there's some really beautiful things in your imagery. So I can imagine it's going to be a very time-consuming, laboring of love project.
Definitely, definitely. It's been really rewarding doing what I have with it. And if it takes a while, it's completely fine. I think once it's complete, though, it's going to be pretty cool to put out there and have as a collection.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I love that, starting with starting astrology and tarot is this, it's so amazing because I've always just done astrology and it's only recently, of course, I've looked at tarot and done tarot over the years, but it's never been this rich, deep experience. So I'm sort of like the opposite way to you. Now only just coming into tarot and the symbolism and how that connects into astrology and it's so it's incredible. Like I don't it's sometimes it's hard to have
Yeah.
words.
No, I completely agree with you. To me, the amazing thing really is that it's such a scalable system, the tarot, the way I think a lot of these systems, a lot of divination systems kind of work this way. But the tarot, it's like if you just get into it, you're going to take a certain amount of information away from the cards. And if you've been studying it for 10 years, you're going to have, obviously new wrinkles, new insights. If you've been studying it for 40 years, there's going to be even deeper insights and everything else. So it's kind of amazing to me that my enthusiasm for the cards is still there and that I'm still discovering things that are absolutely blowing my mind. And the astrological connection obviously is extremely, extremely strong. So much so that my personal opinion is, in many ways, like if you're looking at a card and the card corresponds with the sign, I feel like it's another just expression of that sign. It's just another way of looking at that sign. And so when I see the Chariot card, the Cancer symbolism, really, it's just like it really, really pops now. And so it's a really great way to wrap your head around the symbolism related to the signs for sure.
And I just, I take notes as I'm, chatting to anyone when I do interviews. And just when
Sure.
you talked about still discovering things. And I think that's when you know you're in that zone and flow of just what is friggin' for you. It's seamless, it's effortless, and there is no end. And I think that when you are working with tarot, astrology, and universal energy, quantum physics, the friggin' entire cosmic universe, which is infinite black darkness on da darkness. I mean, nothing makes fucking sense, right? But the thing is that when it still excites you, that's when like you've slipstreamed into something that's really magical, and you can't make that shit up. Like you can't pretend to try and be into something. It still excites you. I could, like I said before we started recording, I mean, we could talk about Taurus for, I reckon, freaking 50 years. It just feels like it never ends. But you can do that with all of them. You can do that with every tarot card. It's excitable and passionate because there's so much to know. And you realize you know nothing and you know everything. And it just becomes this beautiful dance of trying to understand life, but just being a human and just, it's like this, just like a magical little soup, that we get to be in and play in.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also to me, when I think about this dynamic, I'm always reminded to appreciate the journey, but not the destination. Appreciate the experience of wanting to know more and of finding new things that are exciting versus trying to be concerned with, the end result or some sort of finality with it. And I also am reminded when I think about this, just the nature of spirit. And spirit to me is very much related to either, many, I mean, everything seem obviously, but I think of the spiral, I think of the circle having infinite points, the spiral just going on and on and on and on. And so I feel like diving into the mysteries, one of the things that I've done, one of my conclusions is that I need to embrace the mystery of it all. And so I need to embrace the fact that I'm not going to know everything. I need to embrace the idea that, you know, it does just go on forever, and that that's okay. And that's part of the beauty of it, right? Because I think some people, when they first get into some of this stuff, they want it to end, or they want the final answer or something along these lines. And I kind of just see it differently now. It doesn't really work that way.
I 1,000,000% agree, because like, what is the end result? Like, there is no end result. Like, even trying to attain mastery, you know, I have some incredible astrologers that I love and follow, and I just think, oh my God, they know everything, but they don't know everything, you know, like, and even when people think, you know, come to me and like, oh, you're so, and I'm like, yeah, but I still don't know everything. And there is a place of surrendering to the mystery of that and really being okay with that. It's okay to pick up a book and still go, yeah, let's, you know, let's read that book around that tarot card or a astrology and you know, sign, whatever it, planet, and unpack that and see from a different lens. That's what's exciting and rich about astrology, tarot, things like that. But it also is what puts people off, like you said, because they want that, like, oh, but how can I master it and now know everything about it? It's like, well, that's never ending. Like, you will never, ever, even if you become somewhat of a master in your own field or whatever, but what does that even mean? Because that then says it's an end result. You're continuing to unpack things, even with your own chart, like still after decades and decades, I'm like, oh my God, like that is incredible. And I'm seeing it from a different lens, like from the evolution. And I'm assuming that the tarot is the same, like the evolution of unpacking the tarot. And so, like, let's just start there with the card that represents Taurus.
Right. Yeah, the Hierophant card. So to me, it's fascinating. When you look at the card, there it is. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's the fifth card of the major arcana. And this number five is significant, as we kind of just briefly already brought up, but the cycle of Venus and this five-pointed star that it makes, the Venus rose or the Venus pentagram. I'm sure you've covered it, you know, before. And that is intriguing to me, man, for a whole host of reasons, right? So when you're looking at the pentacle, it really is, I think it represents many things, but I think by and large, you know, it is a Venusian reference. And so when you see it around, even when you look at the Islamic sort of symbol of the crescent moon and the five-pointed star, when I see the five-pointed star, I think of Venus. I think of the five elements, that fifth element actually being spirit itself, which that is a big part of this card. Because this man, he's a spiritual man, you know, the Hierophant. He's a mediator between heaven and earth, is the way I generally put it.
Yeah.
And so he's in the middle, generally between these two pillars. And so in that way, he represents the sort of gateway between these pillars, or you could say that he actually represents the third pillar. Or is it the first pillar? That's a whole entire sort of conversation, that middle central pillar. So whenever you see two pillars, just like with the Gemini twins, right, the Roman numeral two, there's an implied sort of throughway, or there's an implied middle path, or there's an implied third pillar. This third pillar and pillar symbolism in general, what it really is all about, from my understanding of things, is that it truly connects the above and the below. It connects heaven and earth. And so he is sort of the, you know, symbolic guardian of that gate, which is why you generally see those two cross keys. So there's a number of ways of interpreting those keys too, in my opinion. But it's fascinating to me to consider all of this pentacle five business, because the Egyptians, from my understanding of things, they had a pentacle in their symbolic sort of framework. And what it represented was the gateway to the underworld. So the gateway to the Duat. And so literally that pentacle symbolically represented the threshold between this realm and what I kind of generally or generically refer to as like the great beyond. And so that's really intriguing to me, because it fits with the symbolism of this figure being the mediator. Obviously, the version that most people are familiar with, he looks like a pope-like figure. And the full name of the Pope is Pontifex Maximus. That's his complete title. And that means the ultimate bridge builder. So again, that bridge between heaven and earth, right? And the number five, too, relates to Roman numeral five, so the V. And to me, the thing that blew my mind you know, when I was studying this stuff years ago, is one, Venus obviously starts with a V. The V is a very powerful letter, very, very feminine. And so Virgo, vagina, there's lots of things with V. And even the V2 being a downward triangle, which is more feminine, versus the upward triangle being more masculine, right? And so that would be the glyph for water versus the glyph for fire. And so more receptive and everything else. But the thing that really, to me, was just incredible to realize and wrap my head around was the fact that when you look at the Taurus constellation, the most prominent feature of Taurus is this gigantic V. And so I'm like, how are all of these things connected to each other? This is absolutely incredible. And even still now, as I think about it, there's still a novelty to this, you know? And I've talked about this at length many times with people. I've made videos about it and everything else. But still, to me, it's really fascinating that all of this just like syncs up and lines up together. And so there's probably other things that I'm forgetting with this, but the five and everything it represents, very interesting. The way I tend to look at the five, by the way, is it really, to me, symbolically sort of represents kind of like the Duat concept with the Egyptians and the underworld. It kind of represents the threshold between this domain and the spiritual domain as well. And so I think the five kind of exists at the crossroads between the material world and the spiritual world. And so that's why the pentacle itself, you know, it relates to the golden ratio, right? And it relates to a lot of the numerology and sacred geometry that relates to the circle as well. And so this infinite sort of concept, infinite points along, you know, the circumference of a circle. And so I see it as being very much this number that bridges the gap between the above and the below, or bridges the gap between the spiritual and the material. So all of these things to me are completely baked into that card.
Yes. Yes. And there's so, oh, I mean, gosh, like the tangents we could go on. So the two pillars, just even, and with this card being that fifth element of spirit and that connection to heaven and earth. And, you know, it's the, you know, what I was sort of researching as well, as like even the hand gesture being as above, so below. Again, we're straight into astrology with that, as the micro reflects the macro reflects the micro, but that in between, which is that, it's that spirit, it's the in between, between like the 11 gateway, you know, the two ones. It's like, but what's in the middle? And, you know, ultimately, that's why cats sit in doorways, you know, they're between two worlds. That's, you know, they rest in doorways for that. And also something that I wanted to say too, with you talking about the pentacle in Egypt connecting to the underworld, well, the second house, of course, too, which in astrology is called the Gate of Hades. So straight away, the second house, which is, you know, traditionally ruled by Taurus, is the Gate of Hades, because it's beneath the horizon. Our ascendant is the horizon. So the second house comes in, and it is, you know, it's very often seen as just like money and finances, but the deep call of Taurus too is like this, which is what the second house is about. Venus, the second house, and now this Egyptian thing that you've just brought on with this underworld, which we know like so much of, like we know the so much of the deep, rich history and tapestry of the underworld, and, you know, all of the things there. But just the fact that you said that around this five-pointed star, and oh yeah, it becomes mind-blowing as to how the universe is so divinely orchestrated and everything lines up like this. Like when you said that around the underworld, I'm like, well, that's the second house. That's the gate of Hades. That is what's invisible. The second house, which is our Taurus house, is the house of deep desires and safety and needs. And it's Taurus for me is the supreme manifester in the zodiac. You know, it's that bull, that earthy anchored bull manifest. So I really, you know, I just really loved that, again, this sort of Gate of Hades sort of comes into it. And whilst, yes, the eighth house, which is naturally ruled by Scorpio, is seen as Hades in the underworld, but literally the second house is the underworld, because everything underneath of the horizon in our chart is invisible. So it's, again, yeah?
Yeah, oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, because one of the things for me that was also very fascinating was learning about some of the lore related to Aldebaran or Aldebaran, one of the eyes of the bull in the Taurus constellation, right? So it's one of the royal stars, brilliant, big red star. I really like looking at it when it's out and I can see it up here. And it's interesting. So the Taurus constellation has two eyes that two stars that represent its eyes, excuse me. One is Aldebaran, the other one is Ain, which means eye in Hebrew, right? But this big royal red star, when I was looking into it, there was so much stuff that was seemingly kind of negative, right? And it was even dubbed the like the gateway to hell. And so my understanding is when you're looking towards that star, when you're looking towards Taurus, you're looking away from the galactic center. When you're looking towards Scorpio and Antares, you're looking towards the galactic center. And so what I've heard is that that is one of the reasons why it's considered to be the gateway to hell, because you're going away from the center, which I think is really interesting for a lot of different reasons. But also what I've kind of picked up, and this is something that I've noticed with a lot of different myths, I'd be curious to know if you feel the same way, but a lot of, you know, animals, a lot of deities that were once revered at some point either get tarnished and their energy kind of flips. And so as an example, a lot of people today, they think of Taurus and they think of a kind of bull that's more masculine, right? And maybe aggressive. And that's kind of the imagery that maybe is put out there sometimes with Taurus. But the further back you go, the more feminine it is. That's kind of my perspective. And so there's actually a lot of deities and creatures and things like that that had more of a feminine correspondence, but today have more of a masculine correspondence. So I would even say too, you know, the goat as an example, I've heard that it was more so a she-goat, you know, really long time ago, which I think is kind of interesting, right? And now we have this idea of a scapegoat. And I did a couple of videos called The Lost Lore of Saturn, talking about how Saturn ruled the last golden age, from my understanding of things, but yet people only look at it as this malefic, heavy, dark, somber sort of presence. But in actuality, that wasn't always sort of how people perceived it. And so I think that there was perhaps a flip of sorts with the bull, and perhaps it could relate to the age of Taurus having come and gone, because that's something that I've kind of noticed as well, is that animals that are sometimes revered for different reasons, or deities that are revered, at some point they kind of get drugged through the mud, or that their energy sort of flips. And so whereas, you know, maybe the cow and the bull were honored at one point, there was, a sacrificial sort of element that got associated with them over time. And there's different deities that are kind of bull-like that are, you know, basically sacrificial in nature, and that they will sacrifice or they want, you know, sacrificial offerings and things like that. Obviously, bull reverence, it's still there in certain parts of the world, but I kind of see that maybe there was sort of this flip happening. But via the Hades connection, though, that makes sense to me, and that kind of lines up with some of what I've read about Aldebaran. Have you looked into that star? Do you know much about it?
I don't know a whole lot about it, but I know that it's the bull's eye, right? You know, and interesting too, that, I mean, what you're even discussing too is like patriarchy, right? Like it's just masculinizing shit that really, even some of the asteroid goddesses who are seen as these, you know, scorn, jealous women, but what they're supposed to accept, Zeus just having sex and raping people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so the patriarchy has come into that. But when we look at astrologically, Capricorn and Taurus are both feminine yin receptive sign. So straight away we've got that. But even the patriarchy astrologically has come in, like talking about like the best houses in the zodiac. And guess what they are? They're masculine, you know, they're masculine houses. They don't want to look at that 12th house, which is, you know, in the 8th house. And, you know, even the second, the gate of Hades, which is like a Hellenistic term. So, you know, like that's traditional astrology, what all the houses are called. And so, it just lines up so perfectly. And I do see that, but when we really, and because a bull traditionally is a male, like he is the male cow, but I love that you just put out your Milky Way thing and talking about milk being the giver of life, and that this comes from the cow. And so the cow is revered, and the bull, you know, is seen to be the masculine, but at the same time, like, I mean, I have always taught my students, what does a bull do? Like a bull literally, well, it's lazy. It just wants to, you know, it just wants to have sex and eat. Like, and realistically, if you have a strong Taurus archetype, hello, we just want good food and good sex. Like that's what we want. Like that satisfies us. We are simple creatures. And I think I love that about the bull is the simplicity, which can be You know, which can frustrate some because it's too simple at times. Taurus can be too simple. But again, when you look at the bull, what does the bull do? You know, the bull creates life. Like we look at fertility being a huge representation of Venus and Taurus. And, you know, even the heart stuff, like I know Taurus rules the throat chakra, but looking into Taurus, as in the Taurus, T-O-R-U-S, and doing that, you know, I literally went for a float yesterday in a magnesium pod. And, you know, I just did the meditation myself, like of just the Taurus field. And it's all heart, but it feels very, you know, but I also, again, like I was saying to you before we jumped on, like Taurus, the earth, you know, the most earth sign that there is, because she's fixed. And then, so she gives life. This is the bull. This is the milk, you know, this is life giving. But then Cancer, you know, this is earth mama. Like this is, again, the cosmic mother. And I feel the connection between Taurus and Cancer really, really beautifully. And that's why, you know, you've got your Taurus rising and you've got a stellium in Cancer, and I've got like a stellium in Taurus and a Cancer moon. And there's something so deeply nourishing around those two archetypes. Yes, right. We can talk fixed stars and all the things, but there's just so much to unpack. It's just too exciting. I feel like a schoolgirl in a frigging shop, you know, like this is just like in a crystal shop or something.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, exactly. I would love to add a couple of things to this Hades business and just how epic Taurus is. And you mentioned the Taurus field as well. So there is actually a electromagnetic field around Earth, right? So sometimes it's called the magnetosphere. It looks exactly like a Taurus field. And so that means that there's an opening up top and there's an opening down below where the poles would be. And so it's really interesting to me that this is the case and that we refer to it as a Taurus field, right? And so this to me relates to this idea that I think we live in a toroidal system, basically. And I see the Taurus field everywhere. You mentioned the heart. Definitely there's a Taurus field around the heart. I think that basically it's kind of one of these not generic, but it's like a basic pattern, right? It's a fundamental pattern. It's a fundamental shape. It's a principal shape. And it's a principal sort of dynamic of things. Things being expressed from the center and then also returning back to that same center, right? And so there is this field around Earth and there is that opening up top at the North Pole. And so this is why there's the Aurora Borealis effect, is because of this magnetic field that opens up at the top, right? And so there's a book that I have by this woman. Her name's Judy K. King. It's called The Isis Thesis. And essentially what she puts out there is that, and I hadn't heard this from other resources, but perhaps there are other people that have written about this, but apparently she was known for decoding and translating some hieroglyphs that other people hadn't gotten around to or something along these lines. But basically what she says is that the Egyptians had this understanding that their stairway to heaven went to the north, and what they referred to this opening as the horn of a great bull. And so to me, that's really interesting. So they related the bull to this great opening at the north, right? Where the Aurora Borealis effect, you know, happens. And this is a common sort of thing. I talk about this more in my presentations than I do on my channel with my short videos and everything else. But this is kind of a very common sort of understanding across the board, where a lot of different cultures have their stairway to heaven. And a lot of times what they're referencing is this sort of opening. And generally, it's this idea that this stairway goes to the northern sky, which to me is really fascinating, because the North Star is the star that all of the fixed stars revolve around, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you took a camera and you just have a time-lapse sort of video of the northern sky, you're going to see all these stars going around this central star. Obviously, not everyone in the world can see it, right? And so this is more of a northern hemisphere sort of thing. Mm. But there's a lot of ancient cultures, like the Chinese culture and in India, where they have an understanding of the northern sky, and specifically some constellations up there like Ursa Major and Minor, which is the Big Dipper and Little Dipper. And so when she mentioned this horn of the bull concept, I'm like, that's really interesting, because Ursa Major goes around the pole star. It's seven stars. It looks like a dipper. And basically, the Egyptians refer to this constellation as the thigh of the bull. So if you look at the Dendera zodiac, you see a bull's thigh up there in the northern sky and it just goes around the North Star. And you could see different rituals where they literally have the bull's thigh. And it was used in this old ritual called the opening of the mouth ceremony. And it all had to do with the afterlife transition. It had to do with going to the underworld, essentially. So the bull of heaven comes to mind, basically. This idea that the universe itself, symbolically, and the opening of the gateway to the other side has been related to the bull, right? So this is a really, really old ancient concept. And there's a number of threads to kind of pull out with that, but that's just a few things off the top of my head.
That and that's amazing because it really does like even just relate to that this whole Hades underworld thing, you talking about the fixed star, the bull's eye, the eye of the bull, like we're looking away from the galactic center, Scorpio's, like towards it in Sat, well, the galactic center's in Sag. So I just the fundamentals and even then just the opening of both the top and the bottom of the Taurus then, right? And I mean, I
Absolutely.
hadn't heard half of what you'd just said. So it is, it's just this deep thread that can it is never ending, and we're never going to finish this conversation. Like we're going to
No,
talk
I don't think
until
so,
we're going to talk till the hour's up, and everyone's going to be like, "Freaking, we want more of this!" Because and you can get more because Mario shares so much on everywhere on his YouTube, everywhere he shares these things, and you can go and sit with him and have a session. I have a tarot reading, which I think that I will definitely be doing.
Awesome.
I mean, just the Well, even just the Pleiades, like this connection to the Pleiades, when it comes to the star system itself, I mean, could be, a 3 hour long conversation. I want to hear a little bit about you and the bull, though, about the cow. I'd like to hear a little bit about that richness that you have around the reverence. And because even, it's quite funny. Like you said, sort of this, it's gone very masculated. And even when the concept of Taurus comes out, what people think about as a Taurus, like, because we've got to remember, and I talk about this on my channel, that like I talk about this on my potty all the time, is that a person is not a sign, like a pe pe people will not like a person and then go, oh, they're this sign, so I don't like them because of these things. But we've all got Taurus in our charts, and wherever Taurus is in our charts is like where we, where our values are, where we can manifest, where we must embody things, and we must be productive. We must use all of that Taurian energy to anchor us into reality, because that's Taurus. It's very, again, look at the cow, look at the bull, look at their what they do. They don't do a lot, and then they're so revered. They're, of course, a cow gives milk. She is, and that's life-giving. Like the woman and her breast cancer is the heart. That's where I was sort of getting with the cancer connection as well, with that heart and the breast life-giving milk. And, so Taurus isn't just a person. So I want everyone to remember that Taurus isn't a person that you've met, a stubborn asshole that, dug their heels in. Like, that's not Taurus. Taurus, that, the bull itself lives this very simple life. And but what I'm finding, as I even understand more from what even you've taught me, is this richness and this reverence that, even on a very fundamental, funny level, like, I do like little polls on my Instagram sometimes, like, okay, so if you could be any, so if you could come back as any sign, what sign would you come back as? And I'm not shitting you, most people say Taurus, right? Like they say they would want to be a Taurus if they came back and they got to choose the sign that they got to be. And the next best one is Sagittarius, right? Like I'm a Taurus and I would want to come back as a Taurus. However, I'm not allowed to, so I'm going to pick Sag, right? So, and they seem to be the two top ones, which, was quite interesting to me. And I'm sure you've done like lots of stuff around Jupiter and the centaur, that archetype of Jupiter, which is also fundamentally incredible. You've got Jupiter in the ninth house at home, so that's probably your wheelhouse as well, teaching all these symbols and stuff. And I love your chart, and I could go on a huge tangent about that as well. But
Beautiful.
I do, yeah. I really, I like I said to you before we sort of jumped on, I wanted to see where Pallas was for Mario, because Pallas is, she's symbols. That's how I see her. She's, of course, she's intelligent. She's born from the eye of Zeus, so she's motherless, actually. She has her armor. She's She's intelligent. She's a businesswoman. She's yang. She's alpha. But what I love most about her is the decoding and the wisdom and the intelligence, right? And so for you, she is in your 10th house, and which is your career. Like, you can't make this shit up. This is your career. This is a part of your career path, you know? Like,
right,
she's
right,
there
yeah.
for you, supporting you. Let's see what sign she's in again. She is in Pisces, of course. The great mysteries of life. The final sign of the zodiac in the 10th house, you know? And this, for me, again, is... it's all there. Everything is in our charts. You know, everything is in these symbols, in the tarot, in the astrology, in the sky, in the, it's just this, it's incredible, right? Like, it's mind blowing.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's all over the place too. Even as you mentioned Centaur, that's kind of an interesting thread to pull out real quick. Cause I don't know if you realize, but Centaur, the meaning of Centaur is actually bull killer. And so
there are
myths where, you know, the centaur basically killed the bull. And so this is where we get the bull's eye from, which the bull's eye is basically a Target, Taurus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so literally the bull's eye is a reference to Aldebaran. It's related to the centaur. It's related to Sagittarius having his arrow pulled back, about to release, you know, I aim being the mantra, one of the mantras, I guess, of Sagittarius. And so to me, this is fascinating too. Do you guys have Target in Australia by chance?
Yep.
The store, right? Okay,
yep.
So Target, right? Their logo famously is a bullseye. They refer to it
right.
as a bullseye.
Yeah.
Right. So literally, it's like a circumpunct. It's a circle with a dot, you know, in the middle. It's red, right? Their branding is red. As I mentioned, Aldebaran, it's a red, fiery star. It's often compared to Mars, actually, the red planet. And so to me, the fact that the branding is red, it's called a bullseye. And then Target, again, it's Torget. So the tar and Target, it relates to Taurus. And to me, it's super interesting that their mascot is a bull terrier. And so of all the dogs, of all the breeds, it's a bull terrier, you know? So there's a lot of Taurus symbolism actually with, believe it or not, Target of all things. And so I'm not sure if they're aware of that. I think somewhere along the lines, maybe they probably did, because they have the bull terrier mascot. And what do they do to this bull terrier? They call the bull terrier, by the way, I think they literally refer to it as bullseye, and then they put a bullseye over its eye, right? Which is just another reference to Aldebaran and some of the things that we're kind of talking about. So just thought I would throw all that out there, because when I was pulling at that thread, I'm like, wow, I can't believe how layered this is.
Oh, and it just goes on. I mean, I was excited because even like I work with crystal energy, liquid crystals, and today is Iolite Day, which is the owl, and the owl is in reference to Pallas. You know, it's one of Pallas's symbolisms, and the owl, of course, we could, you know, unpack that for a million years. You know, this is around our vision, and again, Aldebaran. I never can say, oh, I'm terrible with the fixed stars. How do you say it,
For a long time, it was Aldebaran, and then
yes.
I heard some people say Aldebaran, and so I kind of vacillate between the two, to be honest with you.
Aldebaran, yeah, I like Alcyone, you know, Alcyone, the other constellation, the other star in Taurus, like which is the brightest star in the Pleiades. Like, barely can say that one, but the Aldebaran is vision too. It's the eyes. It's like literally the eyes. And here we are. We're talking about that. It's Iolite Day, which is Iolite Day, which is our, which is vision, which is wisdom, and imparting this. We're talking about your palace, who's in the 10th house. So this is where you have these insights, and you get to share this intelligence with us as you decode and unpack these codes with us. Like, that's your gift, you know. It's amazing. And of course, your Pallas is in trine to your Mercury. So Pallas 23 Pisces, Mercury 21 Cancer. So they're just, you know, this, you, wherever you go, whatever you're speaking, whatever you're feeling, whatever you're, you know, thinking, your mental, like, there's always going to be codes and symbolisms. And I mean, this is why I love this stuff too, because I see it everywhere. I've got Pallas in Gemini in the 9th house. So again, it's just, I can always see the threads and the synchronicities and the, you know, the constant symbolism of it all, like, and how it just continues. Like, I just happened to mention Sagittarius, that's, and then you're like, well, he happened to do the, but like, and it continues. It just, and then, you know, it's just one big, beautiful, beautiful thread that we get to journey.
Definitely. I agree.
I love it. So let's talk a little bit about the cow and just unpack this for 10 minutes before we've got to wrap up so that people can,
Sure.
I still really want people to embody this Taurus archetype through this, this wisdom that you have around some of this great bull myth.
Excellent. Let's do it. So, to me, one of the things with the cow is literally the fact that it's been referred to as, I put this in one of my videos, but the second mother of mankind. And I do think that that's true. And it's interesting to me when you look at everything that it gives and provides, right? So milk, which obviously from there you get yogurt and cheese and butter and things like that. And then the hide, right, of the cow and the bull. And then also too, if you're a carnivore, you might be eating its meat, so beef. But then also beyond that too, right? It's a powerful animal to have on the farm, right? So there's a symbiotic relationship man has made with cow that way, and the ox, which is a castrated bull, so it's more easily domesticated that way. And the ox can pull plows, and then you have the manure, from the cow and the bull, which is healthy for the whole entire ecosystem there on the farm. And so to me, it really does give so much milk, the Milky Way galaxy, as you mentioned. I put out a video kind of unpacking this whole entire idea of the title Milky Way galaxy. The argument can be made that it comes from the cow, right? It's mother's milk for sure, but there is this interesting relationship with the cow. And so one of the things that really put everything kind of into light for me with cow and bull symbolism was reading the book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall. So I've referenced it a number of times over the years. I actually read that book when I was in India and I was looking at the cow and seeing how literally the cow could do whatever it wanted to do. And so even if it's in the middle of the road, everyone just goes around the cow. And it was fascinating just to walk around a city and to see a cow around the corner just sitting there chilling, And so that was cool. And it gave me a new sort of appreciation. I had never grown up around anything like that. India is a very, very fascinating place for a lot of different reasons, And then even when I was there, I believe it was another sort of state within India was banning beef sales, and that literally that you could not eat meat in that state or in that area or that province or whatever it's called. And so to me, that was kind of an interesting sort of thing to see too, where like, that's how sacred this cow is, the concept of the sacred cow, right? But I was reading this book, Secret Teachings by Manly P. Hall. It's a classic book on occultism and symbolism and magic and things like that. So it's very comprehensive. So there's a lot of interesting threads in that book. I recommend people, if they're interested, check it out, and you're going to learn a lot. It'll take you a little while. It took me a little while. But the first thing he talks about in the book, the first plate in the book, is an image called a group of world religions. So anybody can just Google this and take a look for themselves. And you look at the image, you look at this painting, and the paintings in that book are fantastic. And you start looking around, and I started noticing there's all these cows and bulls everywhere. And I was like, oh, this whole entire thing is actually about the bull. It's all about the cow. And so it shows the Apis bull from Egypt. It shows Mithras slaying the bull. It shows Taurus, an expression of Taurus, a couple of expressions of Taurus, actually. It shows the golden calf from Christianity. It shows this bull breaking a cosmic egg, and it's like right next to Muhammad. And so there's all of these little small bull scenes, cow scenes within this larger piece. And basically, what he says is that this is the link between these religions, that all of these religions have this cow or bull myth. And oftentimes, this myth is like related to the origin of that religion. And so, this also parallels some groups' mythology related to a white buffalo. And the white buffalo oftentimes relates to the goddess. So, there's like native groups that have this white buffalo sort of concept. And so, so to me, that's interesting. Even in the Norse pantheon, there's what's called Idumla, and it's this primordial white cow, basically, that existed in their mythology, right? So to me, that's just really fascinating that all of these groups had this bull sort of symbolism baked into the earliest, aspect of their sort of framework of looking at everything. And so this bull is like a cosmic bull, kind of like what we're talking about, a cosmic bull or a heavenly bull, you know, a transcendental sort of figure, right? And I can see why, you know, it makes so much sense. Even going back to Egyptian stuff, there are these illustrations of, you know, a cow, and basically people are underneath the cow. And so the people underneath the cow, when they're looking upward, they're looking at the heavens, which is the body of a cow. And then the cow has four legs. Symbolically, you could say that this relates to, you know, older ideas where there's four pillars that hold up the firmament, four pillars that hold up the vault of heaven. This is kind of related to ideas, you know, relating to there being four winds or four corners of earth. Also, the udder itself, usually there's four teats to an udder. And so this kind of relates to some of the same ideas going back to the Milky Way concept, right? You know, imagining these people underneath a large cow, they're looking at the udder. And then, you know, this is where the stars of the Milky Way galaxy, you know, come from. I don't know, you can make that sort of connection at least. And so really, it seems like the bull or cow, like it permeates, you know, so many different cultures because of how much it does give, you know. Also in India, too, they have these, they're called Shiva lingams. And so basically like a phallic sort of stone, and sometimes they have a base. The oldest version of the Shiva lingam was just a lingam. It's just a kind of like a stone phallus, basically. But they're all over the place. So when you go to any temples and stuff, you're going to see these Shiva lingams. They carve them out of stone next to rivers and things like that. They're really into river symbolism, too, and like spiritual stuff related to various rivers. Their biggest ceremony ever, the biggest gathering on earth, takes place by these rivers. So it's called the Kumbh Mela. There's actually a lot of Aquarius symbolism that relates to this as well. It's very, very interesting, this whole entire thing. But the Shiva lingam, it's not uncommon to see them pouring yogurt on the Shiva lingam, which looks like semen. You know, it makes it look even more phallic, right, and sexual. Wow. and things like that. But they'll pour yogurt on the Shiva lingam, they'll pour milk on the Shiva lingam.
Wow.
They'll put flowers and stuff. They'll also put ghee as well, right? And so to me, that's just an interesting sort of thing too, is that a lot of what they put on it has to do with the cow, has to do with milk, which is a huge offering, you know, because you realize how precious it really is, right?
Wow. It is just in every single culture. Like it's everything. The bull just, we keep coming back. I mean, even that Taurus, you know, the Taurus around the earth that you were talking about, again, that the bull, the thigh of the bull was like that. That's where we're looking. Like that's the gate, like that's heaven and the Egyptian connection. And it just, yeah, it's, I mean, you're leaving me speechless, which is really hard that to have happen. And I mean, but I really like even coming back to the simplicity of what the cow slash bull does. It's practical, it's realistic, it's giving. Yes. It knows how to nourish, it knows how to nurture, it knows how to give. Like, and I think that's, and the solidity in the archetype itself is, you know, it is sort of next to none. You know, of course, every single archetype is rich in, you know, in symbolism, and we can unpack all 12 archetypes with their tarot cards, you know, for years on end. You know, it will never end, which is what's exciting. But, you know, focusing on Taurus now, with Venus has just moved into Taurus, you know, I really hope that this has given all of my listeners just, you know, a new perspective and something to dive into as well. It's not just the symbolism and the archetype goes beyond just Taurus, the constellation, you know, like there's so, and you can go in any direction, you know, understand the Hierophant card, you know, like go and get the card and unpack it, have a look at it. I mean, I've got the Thoth deck as well, and the Thoth deck, you know, that card's so different to Rider Waite, you know, like, so, you know, start to look at it, you know, look deeply into it. And of course, like the Isis connection and the moon, and, you know, and obviously at each, you know, when Venus meets, when the moon meets Venus, either as an evening or a morning star, you know, this is a new gate that's being activated. You know, this is a new chakra that's being activated. These, you know, Venus gates every single month. You know, now at the moment, as we're speaking, she's at home in Taurus, but she's going deeply into the underworld. She's, you know, she's going to be as far away from the earth as she can be. And before she rises as the evening star, and then has her retrograde next year. So following her cycles, because of course, I mean, I'm holding my Ankh here, you know, which again is, you know, Venus and Taurus and Egyptian, and you know, there's just so much richness. And I just, you know, I feel like, you know, I just want to talk to you for like days and days on end, because I think that I'd learn so much, and there's just so much to unpack, and you know, great conversation of going back and forth with dynamics of different things that pop up. And I just, you know, I really think you're a wizard, Mario. I really, really love your medicine and your work. And I, you know, just friggin' thank you for sharing this with us, because like you said at the beginning, you said you were consuming a lot, so you knew all of this stuff, but thank you for, you know, you've got a stellium in the third house, like teach, talk, communicate it out to us, and you're helping us to embody and to get a richer experience of astrology, of the tarot, of everything that you do actually serve us with. So I just want to really, you know, honor you and thank you, and for coming onto the podcast today.
Well, you got it. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. We'll have to do it again. This was a great time. I appreciate your perspective, and thank you for just exposing me to your audience and all of that. And if people are interested in anything that I have to offer, tarot readings and things like that, they can visit symbolicstudies.com and they can find my Instagram from there and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, please do. I'll pop the link to your website and to your Instagram in my notes. And yeah, I highly recommend, you know, everyone go and follow you, because yeah, this is just something that I think that we need moving forward. We need, with AI and all the shit that's happening in this world, like we need these rich teachers that can come into our lives that we can trust, that have done decades worth of work. And especially if this is your, you know, especially if this is something that really, you know, you want to dive deeper into, and it gives you a different perspective and helps you to embody. If my thing is about like, let's embody it. And so what you teach helps us to embody, even as an astrologer, like literally the embodiment that you've just given me here. I've taken notes and just like listening to this, it changes you, you know, it's a beautiful
absolutely
new layer.
No, I'm right there with you. Thank you for saying all of that. I really appreciate that. It means a lot.
Thank you so much, Mario. Thank you to all the listeners, and make sure you head over and follow Mario on Symbolic Studies. Thank you so much again.
Yep, you got it.